Hey, it's Madeline. The best way to support In the Dark is to subscribe to The New Yorker at newyorker.com/dark. When you subscribe, you'll be supporting our show and all the other remarkable reporting that The New Yorker does. And you can listen to beautifully crafted narrative stories by New Yorker writers read aloud.
He looked lean and sleek and surprisingly put together. Were it not for the shackles at his wrists and ankles, he might have been walking onto a yacht.
I noticed, as he made coffee, that his knife rack was shaped like a human body, stuck through with blades at various points.
There were only two possibilities. The money had been stolen, or it had never existed.
Subscribe at newyorker.com/dark, and you'll get access to all of it, plus a free New Yorker tote bag. I must say, the very best tote bag around. That's newyorker.com/dark. This is In the Dark. I'm Madeline Barron. I'm coming to you today with some big news. The Mississippi Attorney General has just announced that she is dropping the case against Curtis Flowers. After 24 years and 6 trials, the case is over. And Curtis is finally, truly free. Curtis Flowers was just 26 when he was arrested for the murders of 4 people at Tardy Furniture in Winona, Mississippi. He was tried before an all-white jury and found guilty and sentenced to death. He appealed and he won, but he was tried again and again, on and on, 6 trials total, years awaiting execution, in a solitary cell, on death row in Parchman Prison. We started reporting on Curtis's case about 3 years ago. We moved to Mississippi.
All right, let's do this.
And talked to hundreds of people.
Hello. Nice to meet you, Madeline.
Nice meeting you.
It ain't too many times when my mind is off of him. I think about him all the time.
Witnesses for the state told us they lied under oath.
4 years, him telling me he killed some people. Hell no, he ain't never told me that.
We found that the science that was used to convict Curtis really wasn't science at all.
That is absolute nonsense.
We identified an alternate suspect in the case.
Did you commit the murders at Tardy Furniture?
Did you?
Dug through more than 100,000 documents.
We have now scanned all trial files at all 8 courthouses.
And we discovered a decades-long pattern of racial discrimination in jury selection by the office of the white district attorney, Doug Evans, who prosecuted Curtis Flowers at all 6 of his trials.
The prosecution struck black jurors almost 4.5 times the rate at which they struck white jurors.
After we released our reporting, things started to change. People around the country began calling Doug Evans' office to complain about his handling of the case. Curtis received so many letters of support delivered to his prison cell, they could barely keep up with reading all of them. A local paper called on Doug Evans to remove himself from the case. And the U.S. Supreme Court took Curtis's case.
We conclude that the state did violate Batson
and reversed his conviction.
For all those reasons, we reversed the judgment of the Supreme Court of Mississippi.
A few months later, a judge released Curtis on bail, and Curtis walked out of jail and into the arms of his family.
I'm so excited right now.
D.A. Doug Evans removed himself from the prosecution, and the case went to the Mississippi Attorney General's office. And Curtis has been waiting under house arrest in an undisclosed location to find out whether he would be put on trial yet again, for a 7th time. Then, just a few hours ago, the Attorney General of the state of Mississippi filed a motion with the court. It said the state no longer had strong evidence against Curtis. It said, quote, "As the evidence stands today, there is no key prosecution witness that incriminates Mr. Flowers who's alive and available and has not had multiple conflicting statements in the record." It went on to say, quote, "The only witness who offered direct evidence of guilt recanted his prior testimony, admitting that he was lying when he said Mr. Flowers made a jailhouse confession to the murders." This was a reference to Odell Hallman, who told us that his testimony about Curtis's confession was all a fantasy. Moreover, the motion said, the court was made aware of alternative suspects with violent criminal histories, an apparent reference to Willie James Hemphill. as well as possible exculpatory evidence not previously considered. The motion concluded, based on the totality of circumstances, it is in the interest of justice that the state will not seek an unprecedented seventh trial of Mr. Flowers. And so, the Attorney General of the state of Mississippi was dropping the case against Curtis Flowers. Almost immediately, Judge Joey Loper, the same judge who presided over Curtis's last two trials and who granted Curtis bail back in December, issued an order granting the motion. And just like that, the case against Curtis Flowers was over. We tried to reach the Attorney General, Lynn Fitch, but she declined to comment. A spokesperson from her office sent us a statement. It said, quote, "As a general rule, General Fitch intends to refrain from seeking media coverage on individual prosecutions in an effort to desensationalize this very serious process for the individuals involved. The families here deserve that respect."
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love: books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson.
Oh.
Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
Curtis and his family decided not to talk to reporters today. In a statement, his family said they wanted today to be a private day for the family to reconnect. But earlier today, a group of defense attorneys who've worked on Curtis's case over the years gathered on a Zoom call to talk to our reporter, Parker Yesko, and our producer, Samara Freemark.
How are you guys all feeling today?
Socially distanced jubilee.
There was Henderson Hill, an experienced death penalty litigator.
It's a wonderful feeling. It's delayed, but it's sweet.
There was attorney Sherry Johnson, who argued Curtis's case before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Good day!
There was Tucker Carrington, who heads the Mississippi Innocence Project. Lawyer Rob McDuff from the Mississippi Center for Justice, who took over after the Supreme Court reversed Curtis's most recent conviction. And there was Jonathan Abram, an attorney from a big firm, Hogan Lovells.
We're all just on cloud nine.
This afternoon, when the legal team found out that the Attorney General had filed the motion dropping the charges, they all got together and called up Curtis.
Well, we talked some shit about the Dallas Cowboys first. Yeah. And then we got around to business.
That business was telling Curtis that he was finally free.
Our paralegal, Ashley Johnson, who has just been an incredible force of nature through all of this, was the one that we all agreed would be the person to tell Curtis. And so that's what happened. And there were tears, and it was, you know, one of the great moments.
Just had a wonderful time talking, and he was very excited. And then we arranged to have the monitor person call him and tell him how to take it off.
Curtis had been under house arrest for months now. He'd been wearing an ankle monitor. And now, today, he could finally take it off.
He took it off while we were on the call all by himself because the monitor guy was able to send a signal to the ankle monitor to tell it, okay, let him take it off. And then he pushed something or something and it came off. So while we were on the call, the ankle monitor was removed.
So what does the news today mean for Curtis's case? Is it over? Is it really actually over?
They cannot prosecute him again. He's off of bond. His ankle monitor is off. He is totally out from under these charges after, 23 and a half years.
Two words stood out in Judge Loper's order dismissing the case.
Case was dismissed with prejudice.
With prejudice. To dismiss a case with prejudice basically means that it cannot be tried again, that the case is actually finally over.
If it's dismissed without prejudice, the prosecutor can let it go for 2 or 3 years and then bring it back. But here we don't have to worry about, Doug Evans coming back behind the attorney general and charging Curtis again. That can't happen. We don't have to worry about a new attorney general coming into office and say, I want to go charge Curtis Flowers. That can't happen. So it's that's exactly what it means.
Did you see this as any sort of statement about Evans and the way this has been prosecuted before?
Yeah, I don't think any of us want to go there.
I think the order speaks for itself.
But I think there is one thing to say, and that is when responsible prosecutors took over the case, you see the result.
That result for Curtis and his lawyers was a good one, a joyful one, one of the lawyers called it. And Curtis's lawyer, Rob McDuff, said that journalism played a big role in that result.
The dismissal of the charges today is the result in part of the work that you all have done within the dark because of the evidence you found during your very detailed investigation and have really, really raised the profile of the injustice in this case. It's helped to provide the conditions that led to where we are today.
And yet, Curtis had still lost almost half of his life. 23 years, gone, spent behind bars.
It's hard to wrap your mind around the years, but I'll just say this. I teach my class the other night. I've got a couple students in my class who weren't born yet when Curtis was locked up.
But if you look at the evidence as presented to the jury, he should not have been convicted. So, I feel very happy at this result. I feel happy that a neutral examination led to the right result, but he shouldn't have been prosecuted in the first place. And there are more of those people out there too.
And your all's data that you collected on all the felony cases, through the tenure that Doug Evans, I would venture to guess that every single one of those cases has a colorable issue of race bias. What about all those people? The work that Hogan Lovells did with all the other capital cases of Doug Evans. What about all those cases? And, we won this case, but what this case did was not solve the problem, really, but draw back the curtain on what is a systemic issue.
I look back on this case and I think of all of the events that had to flip positively for this outcome to happen. The Supreme Court had to grant cert. That was by no means a sure thing. And so many other things had to flip positively for this outcome to occur. And to me, that alone says everything you need to know about all the other cases. Because everything doesn't always flip the way it ought to flip in the criminal justice system.
What are you guys going to do for the rest of your evening?
And sign off Zoom.
Yeah. Move on to the next case.
Move on to the next case. There is one more step that could happen. When someone's been wrongfully convicted and imprisoned, they can sometimes get money from the state to compensate them. In Mississippi, the state will pay $50,000 for each year wrongfully spent behind bars. It caps out at $500,000. But this money isn't guaranteed. To get it, Curtis would need to go through a separate process, and that could take a while, like months, or even longer. As for Curtis himself, although he decided not to talk to reporters today, he did release a written statement. In that statement, Curtis said, quote, "Today, I am finally free from the injustice that left me locked in a box for 23 years. I want to say that I believe there are other men, men that I met on the row, whose cases deserve to be heard and considered. I've been asked if I ever thought this day would come. I've been blessed with a family that never gave up on me, and with them by my side, I knew it would. With their love, staying in the Word of God, with the determination of my legal team, and the countless letters and words from my supporters, the day I've prayed for is here at last." Curtis thanked his lawyers, his supporters, and his family. He mentioned his mother, Lola Flowers. And it made me think of this time a few years ago, when I was sitting with Mrs. Flowers in her living room in Winona. She said something that stuck with me ever since.
"Yes, Lola. I said, now God gonna work this thing out. I do believe. Might not be when we want to, but he gonna do. Curtis coming out."
The way Mrs. Flowers saw it, no matter how many trials it took, no matter how many court appearances, how many days in prison, how many long phone calls, eventually, one day, her son Curtis would be free. Mrs. Flowers didn't live to see this moment. She died 2 years ago. In his statement today, Curtis said, quote, "Mom, I hope you're taking a minute to smile down on me." As far as we know, there are no plans to reopen the investigation of the murders at Tardy Furniture. Earlier today, we made one more call. We called the man who'd spent almost his entire career prosecuting the case against Curtis Flowers, District Attorney Doug Evans, the prosecutor who intentionally struck Black people from the juries, who relied on junk science, who offered deals to jailhouse informants, who then lied on the stand, the prosecutor whose misconduct over six trials is the reason the case against Curtis Flowers dragged on for so long, the man who even now, even after the Supreme Court found he violated the Constitution, is still the top prosecutor in this part of Mississippi. We called Doug Evans at his office in Grenada. An employee picked up the phone and told us Doug Evans was not available. In the Dark is reported and produced by me, Madeline Barron, managing producer Samara Freemark, producer Natalie Jablonski, associate producer Raymond Tungakar, and reporter Parker Yesko. This series was edited by Catherine Winter. The editor-in-chief of APM Reports is Chris Worthington. This episode was mixed by Corey Schreppel. Original music for this series by Gary Meister. Photography for this series by Ben Depp. Additional help on this episode from Lauren Humpert.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.